directives relating to orphans. And give the orphans the wealth which belongs to them. Neither exchange their valuables for your worthless ones, nor devour their wealth by mixing it with yours. Indeed, this is a great sin. And if you fear that you cannot treat orphans equitably, then you may marry their mothers, who are lawful to you, 2-2, 3-3, or 4-4 of them. But if you fear that you cannot maintain equality among them, marry one only, or any slave girls you may own. This will make it easier for you to avoid injustice. And give these women also their dower the way it is given. But if they choose to give to you a part of it, you may consume it willingly. And if the orphan is naive and mentally immature as yet, do not give to these immature the wealth with which Allah has entrusted you for their sustenance and support, but feed and clothe them with its proceeds, and say words of kindness to them. And keep judging these orphans until they reach a marriageable age. Then if you find them capable of sound judgment, hand over their wealth to them, and do not devour it by squandering it, and consuming it hastily, fearing that they would soon come of age. And let the guardian of the orphan who is rich abstain from his wealth, and the guardian who is poor eat from it, in lieu of his service according to the norms of society. Then when you hand over their wealth to them, call in some witnesses, and Allah alone suffices to take account of all your actions. Men shall have a share in what their parents and kinsmen leave, and women shall have a share in what their parents and kinsmen leave, whether this legacy be little or much, as an ascertained amount. However, if relatives, orphans, or the needy who happen to come by at the division of an inheritance, give them too a share of it, and speak to them kind words. And those people should fear that if they themselves would have left their young children after their own death, they would have been very anxious. For this reason, fear Allah and speak for justice in every matter. Undoubtedly, those who unjustly devour the wealth of orphans swallow fire into their bellies, and soon they shall burn in the flames of hell. Surah 4, verses 2-10. The Quran has referred to the welfare of the orphans and to the attitude of kindness and affection that should be adopted towards them at various places. In the quoted verses of Surah Nisa, certain specific directives are given about them. They can be summarized as follows. Guardians of the orphans should return their wealth to them and should not think of devouring it themselves. They should know that unjustly consuming the wealth of orphans is like filling one's belly with fire. Furthermore, this will lead them to the fire of hell in the hereafter. So no one should try to swap his poor merchandise and assets for their good ones. Neither should a person try to benefit from their wealth while mixing it with his own, feigning administrative ease. If such intermingling needs to be done, then it should only be for the orphan's welfare and well-being and not to usurp their wealth. Protecting the orphan's wealth and safeguarding their rights are significant responsibilities. If it becomes difficult to fulfill these responsibilities alone, and people think that ease and facility can be created by involving the mothers of the orphans, then they can marry the lawful among them. Their number should not exceed 4. However, such multiple marriages should only be resorted to if a person is able to deal justly with the wives. If they think that they would not be able to do so, then even for an objective as noble as welfare of the orphans, they should not marry more than one. Justice should always reign supreme. Moreover, while entering into marriage, the mothers of the orphans should also be given mehr, or dower, just as other women are given. The pretext that marriage has been contracted with them for the welfare of their own children is not acceptable in this regard. However, if such a mother gladly forgoes a portion or the total mehr amount, then of course this generosity can be benefited from. Wealth is a means of sustenance and subsistence for people. It should not be wasted. Consequently, the directive of returning to orphans their money should be carried out when they reach maturity and are able to properly manage their wealth. Prior to this, it should remain in the protection of their guardians, who should continue to judge the orphans regarding their ability to manage and handle daily affairs. In this interim period, however, the orphans' needs should be provided for. The guardians should not hastily consume the wealth of the orphans, fearing that they will lose access to this wealth because the orphans will soon reach maturity. In addition, the guardians must take note to speak very affectionately to the orphans. If a guardian is well off, he should not take anything from the orphans in return for his service, and if he is poor, he can take his due according to the norms of the society. Imam Amin Hassan Islahi writes, "Norms means to benefit in a sensible manner from the wealth of the orphans in a way that is congruous with the nature of obligations, status of the property, general circumstances, and the standard of living of the guardian. It should not be the case that a sane person should start speedily devouring and consuming the wealth of an orphan, thinking that he would soon reach the age of maturity." Reference Amin Hassan Islahi, Tadabburi Quran, Volume 2, page 255. When the time comes to hand over an orphan his wealth, some trustworthy and reliable people should be made witnesses in order to avoid any misconceived notions and dissensions. One should also remember that one day this account shall be presented before the Almighty. He sees and knows all things, and nothing can be hidden from him. Although the shares of the heirs to a deceased are fixed, yet if at the time of distribution of inheritance some close relatives, orphans, or poor people happen to come by, then even though they may not have any legal right in the inheritance, they should be given something and be spoken to in a befitting manner at their departure. On such occasions, a person should always keep in mind that his own children can become orphans, and he may one day have to similarly leave them at the mercy of others. Slavery. And if any of your slaves ask for mukatabat, give it to them if you know any good in them, and for this give them out of the wealth which Allah has given to you. Surah 24, verse 33. This quoted verse of Surah Nur mentions the directive of mukatabat. At the time of the revelation of the Quran, the institution of slavery was as essential to the economic and social needs of the society as the institution of interest is considered in present-day societies. In markets, slave men and slave women were bought and sold, and affluent houses had slave men and slave women of all ages. In such circumstances, a sudden directive for their emancipation would have resulted in many evils. For livelihood, men would have been forced to resort to beggary and women to prostitution. For this very reason, the Quran adopted a gradual way to eradicate this evil from the society, and after many gradual measures of eradication, the above quoted verses revealed a directive for their liberation. The word mukatabat used in it as a term which means that a slave make a contract with his master, according to which he would be required to pay a certain sum of money in a specific time period, or would carry out a specific service for his master. Once he successfully fulfills either of these two options, he would stand liberated. In the above quoted verse, the Almighty has directed the Muslims to necessarily accept this contract made by a slave, if he wants to make it and has the required ability to become financially independent. It is further stated that a Muslim government should spend money from the public treasury, which here is called the treasury of God, in helping such slaves. It is evident from the words of the verse that just as this right of mukatabat was granted to slave men, it was also granted to slave women. This, in other words, was in fact a declaration that slaves could now be masters of their destiny and could obtain liberation whenever they wanted. The above stated verse is the last directive regarding slavery. Prior to this, various other directives were given at various stages, because of which it gradually became possible for this evil to be eradicated from the society. These are summarized as follows. In the very beginning of its revelation, the Quran regarded emancipation of slaves as a great virtue, and urged people in a very effective way to do so. The tremendous appeal found in the words it adopted, "release the necks," can be well imagined by a person who has flair for the language. It is evident from the context of such expressions, wherever they are found in the Quran, that it has regarded this virtue to be the first as well as the greatest step in pleasing God. Reference Surah 90, verse 13. In a similar manner, the Prophet ﷺ also urged Muslims to liberate humanity from the yoke of slavery in the following words. "Whoever liberated a Muslim slave, the Almighty in return for every limb of that slave would shield every limb of that person from hell." Reference Al-Bukhari Al-Jami' Al-Sahih, page 407, number 2517, and Muslim Al-Jami' Al-Sahih, page 657, number 3795. People were urged that until they free their slaves, they should treat them with kindness. The way their masters had total and unchecked control on them in the age of ignorance was put an end to. They were told that slaves are human beings too, and no one should in any way violate the rights they possess as human beings. Abu Huraira radiallahu ta'ala anhu narrated from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, "A slave has a right to food and clothing, and he shall not be asked to carry out an errand that is beyond him." Reference Muslim al-Jamil Sahih, page 732, number 4316. Abu Dhar al-Ghifari radiallahu ta'ala anhu narrates from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, "They are your brothers. The Almighty has made them subservient to you. So whatever you eat, feed them with it. Whatever you wear, clothe them with it, and never ask them to do something which is beyond them, and if there is such a task, then help them out with it." Reference al-Bukhari al-Jamil Sahih, page 1056, number 6050, and Muslim al-Jamil Sahih, page 732, number 4313 and 4315. Ibn Umar radiallahu ta'ala anhu narrates from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam that he heard him say, "Whoever slapped a slave or beat him up should atone this sin by liberating him." Reference Muslim al-Jamil Sahih, page 729, number 4298. Abu Masud al-Ansari radiallahu ta'ala anhu says, "Once when I was beating my slave, I heard a voice from behind me, 'O Abu Masud, you should know that the Almighty has more power over you.' When I turned my back, I found that it was the Prophet. I immediately remarked, 'O Messenger of God, I release him for the sake of God.' The Prophet said, 'Had you not done this, you would have been given the punishment of the fire.'" Reference Abid, page 731, number 4308. Ibn Umar radiallahu ta'ala anhu narrates that once a person came to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and asked, "How many times should we forgive our servant?" At this, the Prophet kept quiet. He asked again, and the Prophet again kept silent. Upon being asked the third time, he answered, 70 times in a day." Reference Abu Dawud Sunan, volume 4, page 343, number 5164. And Al-Tirmidhi Al-Jami Al-Kabir, volume 3, page 500, number 1949. In cases of unintentional murder, zihar, and other similar offenses, liberating a slave was regarded as their atonement and sadaqah. See Surah 4, verse 92, Surah 58, verse 3, and Surah 5, verse 89. It was directed to marry off slave men and slave women who were capable of marriage so that they could become equivalent in status, both morally and socially, to other members of the society. Reference Surah 24, verse 32. If a person were to marry a slave woman of someone, great care was exercised since this could result in a clash between ownership and conjugal rights. However, such people were told that if they did not have the means to marry free women, they could marry, with the permission of their masters, slave women who were Muslims and were also kept chaste. In such marriages, they must pay their dowers so that this could bring them gradually equal in status to free women. The Quran says, "And if any of you have not the means wherewith to wed free believing women, he may wed believing girls from among those whom you own. And Allah has full knowledge about your faith. You are of the same species. So wed them with the permission of their owners, and give them their dowers, according to the norms, with the condition that they should be kept chaste, neither being lustful nor taking paramours. This permission is for those among you who fear sin, but it is better for you that you practice self-restraint. And Allah is ever forgiving, most merciful." Surah 4, verse 25. In the heads of zakah, a specific head for freeing necks was instituted so that the campaign of slave emancipation could receive impetus from the public treasury. Reference Surah 9, verse 60. Fornication was regarded as an offense as a result of which prostitution centers that were operated by people on the basis of their slave women were shut down automatically, and if someone tried to go on secretly running this business, he was given exemplary punishment. People were told that they were all slaves of Allah, and so instead of using the words slave man and slave woman, the words used should be boy or man and girl or woman, so that the psyche about them should change, and a change is brought about in age-old concepts. Reference Muslim al-Jamil Sahih, page 998, numbers 5875 and 5877. A big source of the institution of slavery at the advent of the last Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was the prisoners of war. When such a situation arose for the Muslims, the Quran emphasized that they cannot be kept as slaves and must be kept as prisoners of war. After this, if they were to be released, then there were two possibilities. They could be freed either by accepting ransom or as a favor by not taking any ransom money. No other option was available to the Muslims.